Hey, this is Bob in the Don't Die podcast, brought to you by Ohana Fest down in Dana Point, and brought to you by Live Nation, bringing you concerts all over the world. It all begins with getting off drugs, people. Let's go out and live life. Get sober, get the right treatment for you, and stop dying.
Chuck, these kids need to stop dying. I'm telling you, nobody else is going to pay attention to it but us. It's amazing. Well,
yeah, it's amazing, well, you know, how many, but they're not paying it. They're not paying attention to us. It's still. But you know what? We're just going to keep shouting our little message.
I'm not saying cancer isn't a serious thing, but let's give addiction a little fucking space, little typing. You know, a little media coverage. You know how everybody talks about cancer all the time. They got cancer walks, and they got cancer this and cancer that. And I'm not saying. You know, I've lost friends to cancer, and I've had more friends that have beaten cancer than beaten addiction. I can tell you that. But cancer is serious. So is addiction. But yet nobody gives a fuck about addiction. Not at all. Yeah. 500,000 people can die directly or indirectly from addiction this year. If you total it all up with alcohol, car accidents, overdose deaths, and suicide. I always lump suicide in there. I think suicide's a symptom of alcoholism, Chuck, don't you?
Alcoholism and drug addiction a lot of times.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
And America's obsessed with mental health. Oh, we need mental health. The great Dr. Manning, who ran Las Vegas Hospital, he's just a genius doctor. I don't know if he's still with us, but if he is, God bless him. So I'm like new, and I don't know what I'm talking about. And I ended up I was allowed, Chuck, because I was a department head, to eat in the doctor's lounge at the cafeteria.
Ooh.
How fucking great was that, the day?
Did you feel pretty fancy?
A bummer it was for the doctors the day I got made a department head.
Dude,
I could eat in there.
Dude, I know, because at Hogue they're doing everything they can to get rid of all the KDAC, because we're these great unwashed, because we've only got these 36 units and we're lower people. I know.
But so I'm just in there one night, late at night, like 9 o'clock, and Dr. Manning's in there, and I was trying to talk above my pay grade about diagnosis or something.
What are the odds?
And he's just the most down-to-earth, great, gracious, dignified psychiatrist, been around for 50 years. And he just says, Robert, the DSM was only written so that we could bill in the HMO system.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he said. And, and then that's when he's put me in my place. You're talking about shit you don't know anything about. I'm going to give you a tip. It's probably going to stay with you your whole life. The only reason why the diagnostic manual was written, because he helped write it, was so they could quantify treatment and bill through the coming 60s and 70s and 80s HMO system.
So
it's the only reason they did it.
It's so they could have a reference number that says this is what we're doing.
So all the diagnoses have to have corrective actions and treatments and... You know what I mean? So it's only written, like everything in America, it's only about the money. Written about the money. So he said, best thing to always think is people are, patients are a lot of things, not just their diagnosis. Right?
Mm, right.
Something all family members should know. Just because you're bipolar doesn't mean shit. It does not mean shit. But parents love it. I believe parents and loved ones of addicts love it, because then it kind of removes any responsibility they have in the process.
Responsibility, stigma, and I hear it all the time when clients call home. Well, they need to change your prescription because the one they're giving you isn't working. Because the problem is the kid's an asshole. Not that the medication isn't working.
Right. See, that's where us KDACs go wrong. Because we use terms like asshole. That's not a clinical term, Chuck.
It is. It's F41.35.
But it's true for people to know that the DSM was just written because the medical profession could quantify what they were charging for. You know, you cut someone open, you're charging for cutting them open. You know,
right. it saved them a lot of long hands.
You put a cast on their arm. That's what you're billing for. But psychiatry was so vague and more of an art form or a philosophy than it was a medical thing.
Still is.
That they had to come up with something that looked medical, and that is the DSM. And now I think it's the DSM-6 now. Is that DSM-6 probably?
I don't know. Yeah. Last one I messed with was a 4.
Yeah.
Or a 5.
So they, and through the years, they had this thing called hysterical personality disorder. Then it morphed into borderline hysterical personality disorder. Then it just lost the hysterical part altogether because I don't think that sounds so medical. And they use this term borderline personality disorder and bipolar. Anybody that's had two manic episodes in a month is depressed is bipolar.
For life.
I like that's it better. Not, I like the better is manic depressive. I thought manic depressive was a much better. It says more.
Well, it was a better song. It was a better song than Kanye West's. Kanye West, you know, Jimi Hendrix has manic depression. Kanye West has I'm bipolar and proud of it or whatever. What is the Kanye West song, Elijah?
I don't know. He had an album called
I'm Bipolar and I Love It or something like that.
Yeah, that was.
Must have been in a manic phase.
That was the first album I couldn't stand. And it was 25 minutes. I couldn't make it through it.
Oh, yeah. So, but Elijah has a big week coming up. Isaiah's first birthday is it really this Thursday or is it Friday, like another day?
Friday. But the party's
this Thursday is the party.
Nice.
And so all Gene, Elijah's partner's family are coming in for this 1 year birthday.
Everybody.
And,
Everybody's flying in from Miami.
And here's the thing. And Elijah, you're going to be, if I'm good at math, 38 in November?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing. You've now become this amazing guy. And I'm not going to blow smoke. You know, I fucking hate this shit. But
I won't make eye contact.
In the last 2 years, you have grown into the person your mom and I always knew you were going to be. Right? It's because of Isaiah and Gene. It's because of responsibility. You don't have time to worry about some poo-butt problems on the internet. You're a real dad and a real husband, a partner, and a real fucking person. And here's the thing, Chuck. I think we've delayed people growing up too long. As soon as you have adult responsibilities, all of a sudden you see the world differently. I certainly did. I lived until I was 35 years old like I was 14, Chuck.
Yeah. Right.
And a lot of junkies, a lot of musicians do. I have a lot of 60-year-old friends that are still 14.
Well, but that's because they've been coddled for their whole life.
I saw them at the Sublime reunion there. Anyways, so I believe that responsibility demands maturity of you, and you grow and you see the world differently. People used to have children, Chuck. My mom had 3 daughters before she was 27 years old. 3 kids.
Right, but they're just not choosing to do that anymore. They want to have dual income, no kids. They want to travel. They want to have experiences.
Kill themselves half the time too. Why don't they wake up?
That's only the ones we see. There's
no,
other
that's
ones
30% of the population. 67% of the population reports having anxiety so badly that they can't work or go to school.
Yeah.
What the fuck is that?
my friend who had his first son when he was 16 doesn't know what any of these people are talking about.
Right, because they were given other things to worry about. That's huge, right? That's why unemployment.
It's not even a worry. Worry is the wrong word. It's personal responsibility. And responsibility to others. When you're in a committed relationship based around a family, you have to compromise. God knows I compromise. Oh my God, do I compromise. Now, girlfriends I had when I was single are like, he never compromises. He's a one-way street, blah, 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 blah. No, well, you should have had 3 kids with me, and then you'd fucking know that I compromise everything.
My friend said this to me years ago. A friend of mine said, he said about all the ugly breakups and canceling that was going on in my friend circle. And he's like, he's a Polynesian guy. He's like, you white kids, you want to have these big important breakups, but you don't have any stakes. He's like, you don't even have a cell phone bill that you share. He's like, try having four kids with a girl if you want to make your life forever. Yeah, yeah. Traumatized.
That's the truth. And I'm not saying you have to have kids to be fulfilled. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is you have to have adult responsibilities before you can start demanding respect as an adult. And when you get adult responsibilities, 9 times out of 10, you become an adult and you start to see the world differently. And I've watched Elijah over the last 2 years. And I don't know, Chuck, if you've had this with your adult boys, but just become equal to me. Equal. We're equal. Elijah, we are equal now. You have the same stressors that I have. You understand the way that I fucking deal with things. I understand what you're going through. Just when you said I'm heading to the airport, I was like, holy shit, it's like 6 o'clock. He's going to the airport. I'd want to kill myself. Chuck, the reason we're on so late tonight, he was going to the airport in Los Angeles at 6 o'clock.
That's a rookie move.
Hell is better than that. LA County Jail is better than that. I had a meeting today. I had a meeting planned for a month at 1:30. So I can get to work in West Hollywood. Meeting goes for an hour, 2:30. Run to my car, jam. I can get home by 4:30. They changed it to 2:30. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to kill myself. Oh my fucking God. There's no, because if I leave my work after 2:45, it takes me 2 hours to get home. Two hours and 15 minutes. It's actually 42 miles, Chuck. 42 miles, if you go 10 miles an hour, that's about what I get home in. Because you go down Sunset to the 101.
What are you doing in WeHo? What's going on over there?
It's where the management thing I work with is at. And most times you can just Zoom or phone call, but I had to go. So with adult responsibilities, whether it's, you know, completing your master's program and getting a job. And I had this kid, Alan, that worked with me. I don't know, work for me. I hate that term, work for somebody. I don't like that.
Well, there's only pimps and hoes. Are people making money for you or are you making money for people?
Is that how the world is, according to that?
That's really it. Either you're making money for someone else or someone else is making money for you. So I've been a hoe my whole life.
I'm a hoe my whole life then.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
You know what? I just accepted
that. Is that
life.
What Ice Spice believes? Is Ice Spice believe that? I got so many Coachella stories, but let's follow this thing about growing up, because I really do believe that if I hadn't gotten into music, I probably would have grown up sooner for sure.
Oh, definitely.
I would have had to.
Same here.
Because you got to get a job and you got to do things you don't want to do. People don't house
people that don't have a shot at becoming somebody. You know, if you're just an aspiring, someday I'm going to work at Ralph's, people don't bet on that and put you up for the next few years and allow you to practice, you know. But if you got a shot at being a rock and roll star, people are willing to house you.
Right. And willing to tolerate you. So, so anyways, it's a delayed adulthood. Now, mine was because of music. Elijah's was because of music for the most part. But most people I deal with in treatment, it's not because of music or acting or the arts or anything. It's just because they don't want to grow up, but they just want to complain about the Gaza Strip or whatever. I don't know. It just seems like it's an eternal adolescence that just goes on and on and on. And musicians are, you know,
on that continuum, yeah.
They kind of present adolescent ideas to, and it's like an echo chamber that goes round and round. And you kind of live in that kind of adolescent, that you know, extended adolescence, Michael Jackson probably being the best example. He didn't even become an adolescent. He was like a child for 50 years and then he died. You know what I mean? Was there ever a time where Michael Jackson was an adult?
The youngest 50-year-old to ever die. And not of old age.
Although I heard a story about an intervention in him that made me think, like, I wonder what his life really was like. So a friend of mine did an intervention on him, and the whole family was there. And it was early on, way before all the craziness, like over the Pepsi Cola stuff and opioids or something. And And apparently, you know, the when he came in the room and he was introduced to the guy, he talked in the Michael Jackson, hi, how are you? It's so, you know, Peter Pan voice. But then when they read the letters to him, when he spoke, when they said, now, would you like to say anything, Michael? Apparently he said in what the guy who did this thing told me, in Joe Jackson's voice, a very deep, manly voice, you know what? I'll believe all of you, and I'll consider getting help if you all stop taking money from me. Who's first?
maybe he was floridly psychotic and he was channeling someone else.
Joe Jackson. He said it sounded like his dad. His dad was named Joe Jackson. You're thinking the singer Joe Jackson.
What's wrong with you? No, I know who his dad is. I know that his dad was his abuser. But the I always defend people that I was always told you want to speak in the singing register that you want to sing in because it strengthens your singing voice. So maybe he was just speaking in an upper register to strengthen his singing voice.
That might be. But let me tell you, I hate interventions. Can I just say that? Like, we need a better model.
I want to like, do them. I want to do something.
I did one. It made me feel so bad.
You're going to switch careers, Chuck? You want to become an interventionist now?
Well, especially now that Bob says it sucks.
The money doesn't suck. I felt like I was ripping the people off. It's just awful. But we did this one right when Celebrity Rehab started happening and whatever, and we did it as a team and whatever. It was, I don't know. And the guy, I loved him. I ended up being friends with him for like 5 years. And he walked in the door and he walked in his parents' front door. He's like 35 years old. He walks in the front door and he sees me. Like, I'm got my face towards the door. The couch is, his family had the back to him at the front door. And his sister was sitting in a chair, and the other two interventionists and me were sitting in three chairs across the front. And so, and I had direct eye contact with him when he walked in the door. And he's a funny guy. He's a cool guy, smart guy. And he looked around, and he started to smile, and he walked over to me and put his hands out like he was being arrested. And he said, okay, I'll go with you. And he said, hi, Mom. Like, he said hello to the family, but he came right to me, put his hands out like I was going to handcuff him. And he said, okay, I'll go with you. And I stood up. I was just going to take him to Las Encinas. What the hell?
Did you put his hands behind his back and walk him in the car?
No, he didn't. But I was ready, like, oh, this is going to be great. And in my mind, in that second, I was like, this intervention thing's fucking bitching. Like, I didn't have, because I told Shelly and Louisa I wasn't going to do the practice round. Like, I would just be there for the real deal. I'm so lazy. They did all this setup, and they did the letters, and they helped the family. You know, you, like, meet the day before.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, yeah, I can't. I can't go to the thing before, but I'll be there for the thing. And then I'm there for, like, I met the family. I was there for like 30 minutes. He walks in the door, puts his hand to me. I stand up like, okay, well, I'm going to take him over to Las Encinas. And Louisa said, Bob, you need to sit down. And I was like, ah, shit, we're going to go through with this thing. The guy wants to go. Like, I'm going to be home in 45 minutes. I'm going to drive the guy.
You guys got a payday.
I can watch the end of the Dodger game at this point. Like, this is great.
I love your commitment. Your follow through.
So then they have him sit down and explain in the technical way what it is. The guy knows. He just walked up to the guy on TV and put his hands out and said, okay, I'll go with you. The intervention was successful at that point, Chuck.
Well, you could talk to him the whole way over, too, you know. There are ways to talk to people that are so disarming, even when people come in voluntarily, and you know this.
I'm good at disarming because I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, that's me too. You know, I found that that's like kind of my special power is that I can sit down with them and I can go, that man, I don't know what's up. The only difference between you and me is I haven't had a drink or any dope for a long time, you know? So what's going on? And just allow them to be them and ask their questions and be frustrated, not tell them what's up. And it seems to be the only part of it that I get right. The rest of it, I'm not good at
yet. I've had a lot of fun interactions in that first hour with an addict that you just meet. But so
during assessments, it's amazing.
He sits in the chair. The family reads the letters. I watch him go through all these emotions. Anger, defiance, spotting hypocrisy. You could see it. You know what I mean? Like, you people aren't perfect. What the fuck are you saying? You know, and I don't know, the whole thing, whoever came up with it, I think it's an offset of Delancey Street and Behavior Mod and Cry Help and all that. It's like, it's too gestalt, it's too confrontational and too, I don't know, you want the person to get the help, but you want to be heard. Why? The person can't hear you. They're an addict. They're an alcoholic. They can't hear you. Give it 6 months or a year, 2 years, they'll fucking hear you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but almost the writing the letters should be something that people do for themselves so that they can kind of release it, but they don't need to be. You know, maybe we need to come up with a new style.
Well, that's what I'm saying, a new intervention. So then there was another one. It wasn't an intervention. A lot of people, when I had Hollywood Recovery, people would want their kids to come to us and whatever. And so I'd meet after groups with like a family. And this guy that was a friend of a friend, actually weird guy, he controlled the fish, how much fish are in a lake. Like there's fish reports or something. He controlled that. Weird.
Like the game.
So anyways, I was friend of a friend and he said, my son's on drugs. No, they have a fish report of where the fish are biting.
I'm sure they do.
And the guy had the corner on the market of it or whatever. I swear to God. And the office was on Coldwater Canyon and Ventura Boulevard. Every time I drive by there, I think of that guy, the fish report guy.
I want to be the fish counter. That sounds fun.
It's the fish report. You look at it in the morning to see what pier the fish are biting. Anyway, okay. That guy's son was on drugs. And so... So he comes, I say, oh, okay, come on in. The groups were leaving, the outpatient people were leaving, and I sit down, the kid sits down, the dad sits down, the dad starts talking, and I'm looking at the kid, and couldn't have been more than 20, and the dad's talking, I go, okay, well, let's hear from you, like, you know, what's your deal, what are you up for this? And he just sits there silent, and I leaned into him and said, you know, it's your turn, you know, what's going on? Are you okay? What's going on? And he just sat silent and he's looking straight forward, like out the window. And I was like, I'm Bob. And I put my hand out to shake his hand. He wouldn't lift his hand up to shake my hand.
Yeah, fuck you, Bob.
I looked at the dad. I go, am I missing something? What's going on? Are you guys getting a fight in the car? And I'm trying to figure it out and trying to break it down and trying to get to a better place, right? Finally, the kid says, I said I'd meet with you. I didn't say I'd talk. And I just started cracking up.
Well, you just did.
Just like Elijah is right now. I just started cracking up. And I stood up and I said, that's awesome. And then I went out in the lobby and got coffee. And then I left them in there. And I went into my office and turned the stereo on. And I was just sitting in my office. And the dad came in and goes, what's going on? And I go, well, there's nothing we can do. The kid's not going to talk. You know?
You want to listen to some records?
Like, what are you doing? I had a big console that I got for like $35 at the Goodwill on Vine. And my office was on Vine in Hollywood. The Vine Goodwill down by below Fountain. There was a stereo console there. I just loaded in the back of that white pickup.
Wait, a big wooden one?
Yeah, big wooden one with a turntable. And
I want one of those so bad.
Dude, I got it for $35. But
Don't even tell me that.
You have to load it. And it had a needle. I felt the needle. So I brought it up to the office and I had it in my room. And finally, that's what did it. Is the kid was a wannabe DJ or whatever. And he ended up... But they stayed... Group got over... What we do? 1, 2, and 3 o'clock groups over at 4. They stayed till it was dark out. They stayed for like 2 hours. And I was just listening to records, talking to the dad. The kid was wandering around, and then finally he came into my office, and he goes, he's, you know, just, you could tell he had broken down. He was going to talk. And so he came in my office and I said, dude, what are you so angry about? And he goes, well, he was in prison and all this kind of stuff. I was like, whoa, what's that got to do with you? You were like not talking to somebody. I didn't do anything to you. You're like not talking to me. Come on. And so he ended up being a client of mine for years. When I lived in Laurel Canyon, and he did well. He got sober, I think, second try or something. And I hear this, Bob, and I'm walking down the steps of my house, and this kid pulls up, and he's in a big old fucking BMW, one of those big 7,000 G ones or whatever they are, the big fat, you know,
G-Wagon.
Like the biggest fucking BMW you can have. Biggest BMW you can have. And he pulls into the parking lot of Wonderland School across the street, and I come run down. I go, dude, and I was hugging him, and he's got all the grill teeth. You know, by this time, he's like 24. He's got the metal on his teeth, right? And I go, dude, what's that? I go, is this your dad's car? And he goes, no, it's my car. He's telling me all that would happen. He got sober, goes to meetings, everything's going good. He got grills. He loves rap and hip hop and EDM or whatever. He got grills made by this grill maker in like Compton. And then all of his white friends in Beverly Hills wanted grills. So he became a middleman.
The grill broker.
Grills. And then that grew to the hip hop community. And he was the grill guy. And he said, I'm making, you know, all this money and whatever, and it's all due to you and that day and getting sober and whatever. And I was like, how can you plan this? If I would have said, dude, if you'll listen to me and you'll go to meetings and you stay sober, you're going to be the grill king. The grill king.
You know what's even better than that? The icing on that cake is that he learned something in the drug world, and that was never give up your source. Always be the go-between. Because if he'd have told the first guy where he got it from and not gone himself and said, hey, this is my buddy Mark or Fred or probably Skyler, but you know, this is him, and he would have lost all that business.
No, he didn't. And he had a website. I was going to get one because it would have been free, of course, for me. So, you know, I was
thinking, gratitude.
I was thinking of getting one, like one tooth. You know, a lot of people do that. Chuck,
I've wanted gold teeth, and I've only got them in the back of my mouth where you can't see them. I've wanted one in the front of my face for a long time.
No, but they get silver. They can get diamonds in it. They got all kinds of.
Yeah, but I want mine to be real.
My brother.
So, anyways, that kid grew up. Like, you know, at 24 or whatever, but he did it through AA and did it through being sober or whatever. But growing up is important. And I think a really big problem in America is about growing up. I really think we have a really big problem with allowing our children to grow up, right? It starts very early on, right? It's you teaching autonomy and personal responsibility along the way at 7, at 8, at 10, at 12, 13. Right.
And that's hard for us as recovering people, because when we get that,
it's
kid,
hard for everybody.
We kid glove them, because I was a shit parent for so many years that when I finally got them, it's like, whatever you want, let's go do it. You know, it was right. Like I was
no,
like
I know
the Disneyland
that
dad every
I think
day.
Parents are doing that that don't feel guilty. I think parents can't tolerate their children crying. Like around this house, now we have Jay, Elvis's best friend, is living with us now till the end of the school year. Yeah, somebody upset in this fucking house every 17 minutes. Somebody's crying, fighting, arguing, pouting, upset, not getting what they want. You can't like let it, send you off your game. Like, you can't. I just came in here this morning when I was on a Zoom call for work, and he goes, I want to go to the desert. I want to go to Coachella. I want to go to the desert. I said, get the fuck out of here. I'm working.
You said, stuck it up, buttercup. Get a job.
No, but we have a playful way. It was nice the way I said it. I said, you get out of here. I'm working. And then I turned back to the people on the Zoom call, and they were looking at me like, you're the worst. You just talk to a little child like that?
Oh, like, people are making notes.
That's how they end up with their own autonomy. The world doesn't revolve, you know, and all it was, he loved Coachella, not for the music. He loves to just run on the grass. You know what he loves to do? I'll send you guys a video. Should we book him a room at a really nice rehab right now? He's 3 years old.
You told me
he spins until he falls down, and he doesn't get scared from being dizzy. He loves it. As soon as he falls down, he stands back up so he can fall down again from spinning. Like, this is not going to go right.
I wouldn't buy him his first beer. Yeah, they don't have that moment.
I'm going to send you guys a video. You're not going to believe how much this kid loves to spin.
So that must mean that Wiley's okay, because I haven't heard from him in a while.
Yeah, he's okay. Oh, you said the funniest thing. Wiley is the greatest. Okay.
I have
a million spinning videos of Idris. He just loves. He's watching Sublime. He does like. You know what? Sublime is good music for little kids. They loved it. He's just spinning.
You know, guys. I just saw the funniest thing, and Amy didn't think it was funny. She thought I was an idiot. It was just a little caption that said, "The funniest thing in the history of rock music is when that guy from Sublime says, I can play a guitar like a motherfucking riot, and then goes doodly doo 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 doo. That's not a riot." I don't know why it was so funny to me.
It's so hard for that kid. Can you imagine? I talked to him before. Like,
I just saw him down in Sunset Beach.
It's so hard. Like, hey, you know, it was so much Sublime talk over the weekend. Like, I actually knew Bradley semi well, and when he died, I remember specifically when he died, I cried and I was sad and I felt a little bit guilty. I never felt like that's going to be me next. I was like, yep, there's another one of those fucking guys that just aren't going to make it. Not like me and AK, we're going to be there until the wheels fall off. I never thought when somebody died that it was going to, I don't know, that it was could possibly be me. I never thought that. So he passed away, and when he died, no one had heard, like Norwood had kind of heard the new record, but I hadn't heard it and it hadn't come out. And so when he died, he was the guy that was in that band from Long Beach that sounded like Fishbone and whatever. It was like very different than what happened after he died and that album came out. It's like a completely different band sound, a completely different everything.
No, it got super pushed. I mean, it was one of those things where you could see him play locally.
That's not what Sublime sounded like live. I played with them like 10 times. It's not what they sounded like.
I know what they sounded like live. Yeah, they were way more fast.
So the 40,000 people that went to see them this weekend only know that record. They only know those songs, right? And it was weird because they play a lot of the older songs. And Chrissy was a big Sublime fan, my wife, for those that don't know. And she said, do you think they're going to play Date Rape? And I was like, no way. Like, you know, because that was their big song, Date Rape. They had us. No, they didn't play.
Radio.
I knew they wouldn't. They're not going to play Date Rape at Coachella.
That was on the radio.
In 1994, not
2024. Are you kidding me?
And even in 1994, when that song blew up, it was like, maybe. But nobody could believe it blew up when it did blow up. Nobody.
So, shocking. So then I had a problem of Elijah caused me a problem, Chuck, obviously 27 years ago, that a friend of mine said, hey, let's go wish Tony and Gwen luck before they go on. And I was like, I don't think I should go in there. And he's like, why? And I go, my son liked that record, the Kingdom record, and he played it all the time. And then I was at a concert and I said a bunch of how much I hated it because it played 24 hours a day in my house. I fucking hate No Doubt. And Tony and the guitar player were at my concert. But Tony has forgiven me, I think. You know, I was just, it wasn't that I don't like No Doubt, it was that Elijah, who's now so embarrassed. Is he turning red, Chuck, right now?
Oh,
he played
now.
That record from the moment he woke up till the moment he went to sleep all fucking day long. Do you know what that was like for me to listen to that record all day long, every day?
No, I haven't had the experience, but it's a good pop record. It's a great pop record.
It was probably hard.
It's probably no more annoying.
That's where you show your age, Chuck.
Wait a second. This is coming from the guy that played Culture Club to the point where Keith nearly killed you and had to get rid of it.
Culture Club. Culture Club's don't a pop say band. Club is, they're a Motown-based pop than band.
Culture Club are amazing. I made a bunch of hardcore ex-cons listen to Culture Club on the drive to work the other day. I was like, they were talking shit. I was like, you've never listened to this.
This is the best. I know you miss me. I know you miss me, blind.
Any record, no matter how good, will get on your nerves.
So I don't go wish them luck because I felt like, and then I felt like, no, I'm fucking 63. I'll be dead in 5 years. Why do I still have these adolescent feelings that I shouldn't go wish people that I really like good luck? You know what I mean? I had this fucking, but it's all Elijah's fault. If he just sort of liked Bad Religion,
then you can go to the Bad Religion show and say, these guys suck.
No, I could say Bad Religion suck and they don't give a fuck. But, you know, there's other bands that are a little sensitive about what you say about them.
I think their billions in sales made up for the fact what Bobby had to say that night. they've had success on a level that few people ever do. And they seem to be...
Well, here's a funny thing. So then, guess what their first song is? So they play the first song, we're all there, the whole family, it's all this big family, kid gathering, and they play the first song, and I looked at Sid and I go, I think this is the Madonna song. And in my mind, they were covering a Madonna song. Is that one, the dance song? What's it called? Hella Back? Or
Hella no, Good. It's
Hella Good. Hella I thought that was a Madonna song.
They were that big, though.
They were as big as Madonna? Jesus Christ, man. Anyways, they were great.
Era for them.
How great. It was just great. They were great. Sublime was great. It was a little rough because the audience doesn't know the real Sublime songs. They don't.
They know the songs that have been on the radio, and that's what people showed up to see.
So let me tell you a little bit of details. Me and Sid, so we had all these breakouts, like Elvis and Jay were going by themselves. Christine would take Idris home. Me and Sid are going around. We go to Ice Spice, right? And Sid and me in the pit of Ice Spice. To my right, Taylor Swift and the football player guy. And to my left, Sid goes, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I said, what? And I looked at the kid, and he was hunched over, trying to light a cigarette. Seemed like, you know when you can't figure out where the light meets the cigarette. Is that called drunk or what is that called?
He was having problems with his depth perception.
Yeah, he was hunched over in that way that only really drunk people can hunch. Like if you hunch, somehow you're going to meet the match to the cigarette.
Crouch to the match, you'll get it.
He's going further and away.
And Sid's going, oh my God, oh my God. And I go, what? And she goes, it's Justin Bieber. And I looked at him, and he had a grubby long beard, and he just looked skeleton thin. And I was like, Sid, you think you see celebrities everywhere? That's not Justin Bieber. It's just some kid that looks like him. And so I go back to watching Ice Spice. And then I look over and two huge bodyguards come and they're trying to help him. And then another guy who looks like a personal assistant actually lights a cigarette for him.
That's why people stay children.
I look back at Sid, I go, you're fucking right. That's Justin Bieber. And she goes, Sidney, without missing beat, goes, I think he needs to talk to you, Dad. It's so obvious the guy is like had a few.
It's a festival. It's a festival. That's the time to do it. Tuesday morning in his house by himself.
Well, Taylor Swift. So now this is Ice Spice, one of the most vulgar acts I've ever seen in my life. Like twerking every song. Turn around, do the twerking thing. Every song. And in the audience is like the Van Peltons reality show people. Taylor Swift and her boyfriend, Justin Bieber, like all these white people, like white, you know, like that weird white world.
You and your 7-year-old?
Do you mean Vanderpump?
Vanderpump. James Vanderpump. I think it's so everybody's wanting pictures of that guy. And I go, who is that guy? And then Sid didn't know. So I asked this person next to me, who is that guy in that and the pink hat? And they're like, it's James Vanderpump. Who is that? And then the lady said, he has a reality TV show just like you. And I go, I haven't had a reality TV show in 15 years. And they said, well, Vanderpump, right. Is that an Orange County thing?
Yeah, you know what? It started in Huntington Beach because we're obsessed with celebrity. No, I think it's a South County thing.
So you got to ask yourself, what is it in the Vanderpump, Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber world that makes them so in love with Ice Spice? If we can figure that out, we can cure cancer and addiction. What is it?
Wait a second.
Why people love this? Because I hate to admit it, Chuck, but I was in New York City in the mid-80s till when Bush was elected. Off and on, I was in New York a lot. I've been to many strip joints in New York, Chuck. Some in nice parts of town, some in not so nice parts of town. There's something very New York City strip club about all of these pop rappers. I'm not saying they're strippers, but I'm saying there's a stripper.
It's gritty. It's
kind of like, there's something about it that is very strange. So I just watch all these white people just loving this stuff. So we go around back and talking to Wiley, and Wiley is talking to a person that works with him, and she's saying, well, she's supposed to be here any minute. What do you want to do? And Wiley said, she's off at 9:10. If she gets here by 9:10, she can go right on stage and do whatever the heck she's going to do. And I go, who's coming to sing? And he goes, who's coming to sing to the person he didn't even know? And she goes, Billie Eilish. And so then Sid's like, Billie Eilish is coming. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And then 9:01, 9:02, 9:03, Billie Eilish's golf cart got caught in traffic or something. And she couldn't get there. And at 9:10... Wiley's just like, pull it. She's done. We got a big changeover, whatever. So Ice Spice walks off stage right to us. She's like 5 feet away from us. Me, Sid, Wiley, and Ice Spice. Sid waves to
that
her.
That is an odd grouping.
And Ice Spice waves back. And then she's getting the things, the monitors taken out, like the things out of her back and whatever. And she's taking it, and then she can tell, because I got my phone out, I'm ready for Sid to get her picture taken with Ice Spice, like any good dad, right? The Vanderpelts would do it. I'm going to do it. If Taylor Swift had children, she'd be getting their picture taken with Ice Spice. And I'm pushing Sid, and Ice Spice senses, oh, it's a dad and a little girl. As soon as I get my monitor off, I'm going to take a picture with the little girl. And Sid just keeps pushing back against me and goes around behind me. And then I had to signal to Ice Spice, I guess she's too shy, sorry. And Ice Spice was cool, and then she went about her business or whatever. And I said to Sid, like, you didn't want your picture taken with Ice Spice? And she goes, I don't like her that much. It gave me hope for the future, Chuck. Hope. Sydney is not into fame for fame's sake. She wants a picture taken with Jungkook from BTS because she would die for Jungkook of BTS.
Okay.
Ice Spice, she doesn't like so much. She doesn't need a picture with her.
Don't you think that that's
there she is. I'm talking about Sydney, and there she popped up.
You said her name three times. That's the way it works. Ice Spice.
Why didn't you want your picture taken with Ice Spice?
I don't like her.
Wait, Dad, this begs the question. Are you dragging Sydney to see Ice Spice because you want to see Ice Spice? Has this happened multiple times?
It was the thing to do. It's the way. Did you want to see Ice Spice? Or why did we go over there?
Elvis was going.
But.
So the same way that people have influencers everywhere, I would not be surprised if all those people, all the famous people that are in the pit, are part of the, you know, like the same kind of thing where the guys get paid to go around and scoop up hot girls to take to the clubs to get people to go, to build a buzz, to make it look more important than it is.
Is that the spot? I can tell you the spots where they all were. And it is true. So they were all, the whole fame game gang except for Billie Eilish. She operated in her own fucking operating system. But all of them, Taylor Swift, the rappers, all the, you know, there's the guys biggie. Walking around there in the crowd with like $2 million worth of diamonds on. I don't know how they don't get robbed. It's crazy how much diamonds are there. So they all go to Bleachers, which is Jack Antonoff's band. They all go to Tyler. They all go to certain things. There's Idris. What are you doing, Missy? You want to go to Coachella? You want to go to the desert? Yeah. We got to go to baby Isaiah's birthday on Thursday. There's Elijah's right there.
Are you Elijah's going out there, Elijah?
No, you have to pay me a lot to go to Coachella. Hey, Idy.
Oh, there he is. There he is. We're going to go to Isaiah's birthday.
Good to see you.
Yeah. So some of the themes are that people should take on more responsibility earlier in life. You'll grow up faster and you'll be happier, I think. Even though all three of us have lots of stressors and lots of responsibilities and you want to kill yourself half the time, it's joyous. And when I was living in Joshua Tree and you had grown up and I didn't have a girlfriend, I was just living the way, you know, you're supposed to live and whatever, I was miserable in a different kind of way, in a sad, depressed, what is the meaning of life way. When you got this kind of chaos going on, now Elvis is here. There's everybody. Elvis, the reason why I see Ice Spice.
What? My God, did you get taller in 2 weeks?
What?
Can we go thrifting?
Thrift shopping at 8 o'clock at night?
Dude, what's up until 10?
I'm not going. I'm not doing a podcast. I can't go thrift shopping.
Can I be honest?
Dr. Drew Medicine
is on the counter.
Get the
fuck out of here.
Yeah, what the fuck? Did you poop? It smells like poopy.
I did.
Did you poop? Go tell mama you pooped. All right, I'm on a podcast, you guys.
Well, so
you'll be on in another day.
So anyway, when you get back there next weekend, give Wiley a hug and tell him I hope he's okay.
I will. He's great. Yeah.
Kobe was huge to him, and I know that messed him up.
Yeah, Kobe wasn't there. All right, you guys got to get out of here for now. Just let me wrap it up.
And can we go thrift shopping?
No, we're not going thrift shopping at 8 o'clock at night.
But it's until 10.
Oh my God, Chuck! What do you do?
It's been 17 minutes.
Elvis, you got a bike. Elvis, you got a bike. Get on your bike and go thrifting.
His mom won't let him.
Tape a flashlight to the handlebars and get down the road. Yeah.
So, anyways, Coachella was fun. It was fun. It wasn't fun picking Elvis up after Tyler the Creator's last song. Oh, here's a good one, and Elvis is here for this. So. Elvis has always been good about getting out into the car and get gone before traffic and leave early and all my mottos, all my mantras, all my lifestyle choices. So I tell him, you know, you guys got to leave like 15 minutes before the end of the set and walk to the artist's parking and I'll be there and pick you up and get the fuck out of here before it's over. And what did Elvis say? I'm staying to the end. And I said, you're going to be in 2 hours of traffic. And Wiley told you. Wiley told you it took him 2 hours to get 8 miles to his house. Anyways, so it's true. Like you wait till the last song.
Yeah.
100,000 people are walking out of there.
Generational differences, Dad.
Wait till what he said. Wait till you hear what he said. He goes, Dad, would you leave Led Zeppelin 15 minutes before the end? And I said, fuck Absolutely. Yes, I would. Yeah. For sure I would.
Fuck traffic.
And then it dawned on all of us, including my friend Dave, he just compared Tyler the Creator to Led Zeppelin.
Well, they're kind of the same. I mean, musically, stylistically.
Close to as good as
Led Zeppelin. I hear it. They couldn't hold a candle to Tyler.
They couldn't hold a candle to Tyler.
Holy He's the creator. God in
heaven. Duh. You've never heard a Tyler song for the record.
I heard Odd Future album. I'm the first person that played Odd Future on the radio at 103.1. Stop. Yeah.
People don't even know what a radio is anymore, Dad.
Oh, wow, you're up against it. You know, I saw a friend of yours this weekend, Bob. While you were at Coachella, I was at Alex's bar seeing the Hangman, Brian Small.
Brian.
Yeah. We talked about
life. He and I.
We talked about Mike for a while. We talked about. I guess he he used to listen to this and he really enjoyed it. Maybe he still does. I don't know, but just what a nice guy and what a fun band.
Oh yeah. Really good band. Like there were so many good bands back then.
Yeah.
They're good, but in that era.
That was and it feels authentic. The way he talked about you, he was smiling.
And I love so that guy.
He remembers good times, and we talked a bit about Mike, and it was really cool. It's good for my soul to talk about Mike in a positive way, and just moving into that part of the acceptance, because I'm sitting here and I'm looking at my Mike button, from the thing, but it's just like, dude's gone. And it kind of felt like it was in acceptance mode on,
I don't follow the Kubler-Ross. I just get, I don't know what, I get numb and then I get angry. And more, I just think there's lots of mics that needlessly die because of our broken healthcare system. That's all I keep thinking. We have a broken healthcare system.
Dude, you're preaching to the choir. You don't know this, I don't think. About 3 weeks ago, Bug was having a hard time putting the key in the front door. Amy was noticing doing some things weird. And his teachers actually said something. He's having a hard time reading. Well, he's blind in his right eye. And he's got cataracts in both eyes, can't see out of his right eye. So he's got no depth perception. And we've been trying for 3 weeks to get a referral. You'll love this. When we were leaving the place, the retinal specialist, where they sent us a picture of it, they looked in his eyes and said, he's got cataracts. His eyes, when they're dilated, look like an old dog's,
Right.
And he goes and he puts on Kiss Unplugged, Going Blind. And he goes, like me. And then he put on Hotter Than Hell, that version of Going Blind. And he sang it so loud.
The Hotter Than Hell version of Going Blind. So good, Gene Simmons. I think I'm going blind.
It's like me.
Amy just got an appointment today. For those that don't know, this is a child in America who has health care, who has to jump through all the hoops. One third of all medical costs are arguing over the bill. It's a broken system. And I don't mind saying it. I've been labeled whatever I am. This is Barack Obama did this. He went to the insurance industry, a for-profit industry, a secondary market. They're not doctors, they're not hospitals, they're insurance companies. And he let them write the book on how it was going to work. It's just bullshit. I just can't tell you. Mike, when Mike first got the diagnosis, I've said it before, I just can't get off of it, Chuck. They told him he had a tumor on his liver, right?
Uh-huh.
Then nothing happened. At first you don't say anything because you expect him to talk more about it a couple weeks later. He doesn't. Then I talked, he called me about something else. I go, dude, what's happening with your liver? And he goes, we're just waiting to hear back. I said, who is we and who told you that? And he goes, well, what do you mean, who's we? And I said, who told you that just sit around and wait? They know whether it's malignant or benign right now. Why are they not telling you? And he goes, I'm just waiting for the call. I go, they're not going to call you. So no. There was a whole month there where nothing happened. I'm not saying that's going to save his life and whatever, but this is our system. A whole month where he thinks they're supposed to call him. They're not going to call him. They don't even know who he is. He's just a fucking number in a computer.
Yep. That's what Amy, for the last 3 weeks since we left the retinologist who said that these cataracts, one eye is compromised and the other is blind. And it's because of the medication. So we need to do this. I'm going to send you a referral. Today, she finally got a referral after chasing people every weekday for 3 weeks. And she has an appointment for the initial consultation in June.
That's Amy, who's a on her shit all the time person.
We're not gonna see him.
What about Mike Mart, who's waiting around for them to call him?
Right.
They're not going to call him. So So I had to say, Mike, you need to fucking call them. Right? I just keep, and Mike's not the only one. And it's just like, why is the insurance industry a part of healthcare in America? Ronald Reagan and then Obama. So a Republican and a Democrat, red team, blue team, brought us this horrible healthcare system where the insurance companies are seen as some thing that is a part of healthcare. They're not. They're a billing service.
They should be nothing but the back end, the back end of it. And they're the whole process. And that's why they don't take the Hippocratic Oath. They don't have to fucking inform you as soon as bugs results come in, what you need to know. And they don't. It's not in their interest to give you service as fast as your son.
Right. That would be huge if doctors were actually honest enough and trustworthy enough to bill for what's needed for people as opposed to what they want to bill for.
Well, no, but I know I worked in that side my whole life. I come from a medical family. I've fucking seen it my whole life. When they make a mistake like anybody can make and they get sued for $5 million because somebody,
clawback?
You know, yeah, it's ridiculous. So nobody should want to be a doctor in America, in my opinion. Nobody,
right?
You know, we need a better healthcare system. We're probably not going to get one. I know that Mike would have had a better chance if he was like Amy, if he was on it and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. When he told me that they took him off the transplant list, I said, why? And he goes, I don't know. I go, Mike, they just took you off the lifeline to live. And they didn't tell you why. I said, what do you have to do to get back on it? And he goes, I don't know that I'm getting back on. I think it's over. And I was like, you think Amy would have taken that for a fucking answer?
No, but you didn't take that for an answer, and I didn't take that for an answer. I know that was our conversation, was you were like, okay, so what is it, a matter of money? What is it, a matter of this? What do we need to do to make this happen? I remember that was you went right into problem solving mode, and he wasn't so there. Ridiculous. I think he knew more than he was letting on. And I think, you know,
I know that they have criteria and he wouldn't share that, but I know some of it, because of how he got on the transplant list. He has minor but dependent children. This is how they determine whether you live or die in this country. If you have minor dependent children, if you're Native American, like if you're 67, if you smoke, you're a former smoker. Like, why are we basing who lives and dies on these arbitrary questions?
Remember the death councils people were so afraid of?
We have them. They're not people. They're just in a computer.
Following codes and keeping costs down. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not Native American. If I get this shit, I got minor dependent children. I hope that'll work. But I'm going to fight the system. Well, somebody said something interesting. Like when people criticize some of these newer musicians, they just crumble and they quit and they get really discombobulated. Talking about Meg White today and how great White Stripes were and her being criticized so much for her drumming really did make playing music not fun for her. And I would be like, fuck all y'all. I'm the fucking greatest drummer in the world. I'm in the White Stripes and you're all listening to me and you're all Googling and reddit-ing at me and Facebooking me. Fuck all you all. But then the person I was said that to said, yeah, but you have antisocial personality disorder.
Yeah. I was going to say ODD for sure. It's absolutely oppositional defiance disorder.
But obviously Meg White is not emotionally, I call it emotional resilience. You can call it whatever diagnosis you want.
Oppositional defiance.
I don't give a fuck what you say about me. I don't. And I haven't since. I cared when I got sober. I certainly cared. But I noticed when Celebrity Rehab got attacked, I didn't care at all. I was like, whatever. It's a bunch of fucking miserable people. They don't even know what they're talking about. I really remember having, when we got so hyper-criticized for it, I remember one of my best friends criticized it to my face, and I said I was exploiting a friend of ours and whatever. And I was like, that's your opinion. Whatever. Why don't we ask him if he thinks he's being exploited? you know, everybody speaks for everybody else all the time on these fucking Reddits and all this bullshit.
Well, that's why that's so annoying. You know, let the people talk.
So anyways, I realized like something had happened to me where I really, because I had said for years I didn't care, and I did care, and it did hurt me that people criticized my complexion or my songs or that I'm drunk and idiot or whatever. It did hurt you. It stings you. And I understand Meg White's like stinging about her drumming. It's like, you know, I can understand that hurts. But at a certain point, you have to evolve to a place where you're just like, fuck these people, especially when you know who they are. They're a bunch of fucking nobodies that sit around the internet kind of criticizing people all the time.
Well, yeah. Jealousy, the jealousy happens and they don't deserve it. I do. I just.
Well, that Perez Hilton guy, remember Perez Hilton? He was criticizing everybody all the time. Yeah, but he got crucified and everybody turned against him. And then the people he had really been hard to forgave him. And that was like a really nice thing. Like he was harsh with people. He said some horrible shit about people.
He went up against anybody that had a platform to create a platform for himself. I'd rather have him do that than kill somebody famous to become famous. The way he did it was much nicer than,
better than Mark the way David some Chapman. Other people do it.
Yeah. I'd much rather have them just draw wieners on their faces than have them kill somebody to get famous.
Yeah, but it's just the beginnings of all this. And I just realized, like, I you have to get to a place where you know who you are and you know what's fair criticism and what's just stupid, right? And
I think that's part of growing up, Bob.
I saw White Stripes at Spaceland. I saw them at the El Rey, and then I saw them at Coachella that first time they played. I never looked at Jack. I always looked at that Meg because she's beautiful, but also just she looks so cool drumming. How can anyone look at that girl drumming and listen to the beats of those songs and go, this girl is a bad drummer? The fuck is wrong with people? Girls, awesome.
They do it with Ringo. They do it with Charlie Watts. They do it with everybody. They do it with everybody that keeps a beat without showing off. Good night. Good night, guys.
Good night, guys.
And Elijah's on the screen. It's like Three Forest Boys. I'm not going to win an argument with Three Forest Boys.
You're outnumbered and outgunned, sir.
You're holding your own.
All right, let's go.
As long as one of us is in diapers, you're doing good.
Love you guys.
See you on Thursday, Lodge.
Love you guys. Bye.
Bye. Don't die. You either.